All right, so we are holding on Samach Gimel Amud Bet. Let's talk about it later. Now we're holding on Samach Gimel Amud Bet, about 2/3 of the way down the Amud, line against he. About 12 lines from the end of the narrow line. The line begins he. Yeah, about 12 lines from the end of the narrow line.
Okay.
So we've been talking about the non-kosher birds. We established yesterday that we said Rav Chista had said there were 24 listed in the Psukim. Rav Avohu had argued because he has a different definition of what some of them are, and therefore he came up with 23. Okay. Tanya, we learned in a braisa. One of the birds we mentioned in this connection was the ayah. We said the ayah is mentioned in Vayikra and again in Devarim. And we discussed, according to Rav Chista, we said the ayah is the same as the daya, mentioned the next one in the pasuk. And according to Rav Abahu, that and also they're identical with the ra'ah and the da'ah, which are mentioned respectively in Devarim and in Vayikra.
Well, they're saying why the Torah uses different names.
So that's the point is, we said why should a shalom litin pitzchon pelabal din lachlik, in order that if a person claims, hey, this is a different bird, I call it by a different name, so it should be mutter, you'll tell them, regardless whatever name you call it, whether you call it ayah, whether you call it daya, whether you call it da or whether you call it ra, it's still awesome. That's the point. That's the point.
To give different names
in case somebody is going to say, hey, it's a kosher bird. In case somebody names it differently. Exactly. Okay. Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Isi ben Yehuda Omer, Meya Ophis Tmei in Yesh B'Mizrach. There's 100 types of non-kosher birds in the East, with Pashtus meaning like maybe in Babel, maybe in Afghanistan, whatever. V'cholon min ayahen, and all of them are subspecies of ayah. In other words, when the pasuk says in Vayikra v'esa ayah l'mina, and when it says in Devarim v'esa ayah v'hadayah l'mina, it means that it includes all those various subspecies. Toni Avimi Brei de Rabahu, Avimi the son of Rav Abahu taught a braisa, Zayin Meis Mine Dogim Heim. There are 700 types of fish. Whether we mean Tomei or Tahar, let's talk in a second. V'chesmeis mini chagovim, there are 800 kinds of locusts. V'la'oifus ein misper, and as far as birds, there's no number how many there are. Everyone says, what do you mean? If we're talking about the non-kosher ones, now Rashi explains that we're talking about the non-kosher ones. That was saying there are 700 types of non-kosher fish, 800 types of non-kosher locusts, and an infinite number of non-kosher birds. So Tosfos explains that this, so we'll see in a second how that is, we said there's only 24. So Tosfos explains, you know, the point of what would be the point of knowing that would be, let's say, suppose you have, now we're going to talk in a couple of blocks that when it comes to fish, you have some, we learned this in Avodah Zarah as well, that there are some kinds of fish that don't have scales when they're young and they only develop scales when they're older. So imagine that you have a type of fish that you've never seen before. It doesn't have scales right now. And you're wondering, is it ever going to grow scales? Can I eat it? So Tosfos says, in principle, the reason why it's important to know that there are 700 types of non-kosher ones is if, suppose you know the entire list of 700, and you know this is not one of them, then you'd be allowed to eat it, because then you could assume it's one of the ones that will eventually grow scales. So that would be the relevance of knowing how many non-kosher ones there are. With that said, though, that Hagoy Sabach brings from a medrash in Eicha Rabbah that says that actually we're talking when we say there's the 700 types of birds and the 800, or not birds, the 700 types of fish and the 800 types of locusts. Hagoy Sabach brings from the medrash over there that it actually means Tahar species. So in other words, even though, for example, as far as Chagovim, we're going to learn later on in the Perek, that there are actually only 4 or 8 major types, but each one has, according to that medrash, will be each one has a bunch of subtypes.
But we still need Maser.
For birds, yes. For locusts, yes. For fish, no. Since the Torah itself lists the synonym of kosher fish, fins and scales, then no, we don't really need a Maser for it. Anyway, so the question is, what do you mean that there are an infinite number of birds, assuming we mean non-kosher species, Ophis Chavdalahava, we just said before that there are only 24. No, what the braisa actually means is there's a very large number, an uncountable number of kosher species of birds. And they are
much more kosher.
There are many more kosher than non-kosher birds, as opposed to with land animals, where it's the other way around. And in fact, Tanya, we learn in a braisa, Revium, Goli v'yadua l'fnei misha'oma v'haya arlam, it's well known and revealed to Hashem, who spoke and the world was created, that there are many more non-kosher land animals than tahor ones. Lefichach, mana akasa, b'tahorah. Therefore, the pasuk lists only the tahor ones in Parshas Re'eh. It lists 10 species of kosher land animals, because if it had to start listing all the non-kosher ones, it would be a very long list. Similarly, goli v'yadua l'fnei sha'amash v'haya olam sha'ofis tahor and merumim l'atzmeim. On the other hand, Hashem knows good and well that the number of kosher birds outnumbers the number of non-kosher ones. Lefichach, mana akasa, b'tmei, and therefore the pasuk lists the non-kosher ones, because if it started listing all the kosher ones, it would be a very long list. So the question is, my kamash malon, what is Rebbe's point in explaining this? The answer is, kidir Rav Huna Amar Rav. He wants to tell us what Rav Huna says in the name of Rav. Amri lo Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav Mishum Rav Meir. In the second version, Rav himself didn't come up with this on his own. He said it in the name of Rav Meir. Lo olam yishana odim lo talmidei derech tzara. A person should always teach his talmidim in the shortest possible way, because that way they remember it better. This is, in fact, if we're saying, according to the second version, it's Mishum Rav Meir, one reason why Rebbe picked, we know that Rebbe picked Rav Meir's version of the Mishnayos and made that the basis of the Mishnayos that we have in front of us. But yeah, each Tana had their own style of the way they taught their Talmidim. Rebbe picked Rav Meir's. One reason is because Rav Meir's was the briefest, and in his wording, he includes a lot of information. A lot of times, the Gemara will point out that you have information that you can deduce from a Mishnah, incidentally, even though it's not said in so many words, but you can deduce it by the phrasing of the Mishnah. We have that many, many places in Shas. So that's an example of you teach them in the shortest possible way. That way they have less material, that way they have less to remember, and they're able to remember it better. So similarly over here, the turtle lists the kosher land animals and the non-kosher birds for that reason. Okay. So Rabbi Yitzchak tells us now, kosher birds can be eaten based on a masorah. Which means neman atzayed loymar. That so in other words, a masorah would mean, in other words, if you, Rashi says, if you remember that there was an adam kosher, a person who's known to be a good yid who ate a certain bird, or you learned from your rebbe, or you learned, as the Gemara is going to say now, from a tzayed chacham, from a trapper who knows the game, that would constitute a masorah. So the way the Gemara is saying it makes it sound like
anyone.
One second. Not that anyone, but it still has to be somebody reliable. The point is, the way the Gemara is saying it in context, it sounds like what it means is, you can use the simonim that we said before. Aside from that, if you have a bird where you're not sure what the deal with it is, because it has one or two or three simone kashrus, and we said before, you can't be sure about them, if you have a masorah that somebody ate them, then you can eat them. The way that we apply the halacha nowadays is a little bit different. We say that in general, forget the simonim, because we really can't be sure about the details of the simonim, especially because two of them, at least two of them, the zefek and the efbi yaseira, actually three of them also because doris, you have machlokas who are showing him what exactly they mean anyway. Therefore, the result is that we only eat tahor birds with masorah. We don't check them for any of the simonim. Yeah. Rather, we say if we have a masorah on it, then we eat it, and if we don't, then we don't.
Does the Gemara elsewhere qualify what constitutes the kosher masorah?
Not really, because for most purposes, you don't really need a masorah. For most purposes, you have a certain din and you follow it. But here, Rashi is explaining that the imzachu ba'adam kosher shachli. If you remember that there's a person who was known to be a good Jew who ate this bird. Or your rebbe or trapper who's a chacham informed you that this bird is tahor, then you can rely on that.
Okay. So he doesn't have to be a talmid chacham.
Well, the tzayed chacham means that he doesn't have to be a career talmid chacham, but he has to be somebody at least who knows these things. Okay. Neman a tzayed loymer, and therefore in this connection also a trapper is believed to say oif tahor mosel li rebbe, that my teacher taught me that this bird is tahor. That only works if this chacham is familiar with all the different types of birds and with their names. Because after all, he has to know that's not one of the species mentioned in the psukim. So boy Rav Zera, said Rav Zera asks, when you say that the trapper says, oif zeh tahor masel li rebbe, what do you mean by rebbe? You have to realize in Gemara terminology, the word rebbe means a teacher, but it can mean two different things. It can mean a teacher of Torah, mm-hmm. or it could be a teacher of some other kind of discipline or whatever. For example, in Avodah Zarah, you have a story over there involving Rabbi Elazar ben Parita, who was arrested by the Romans, and one of the charges against him is that they call him Rebbe, and at that point, learning Torah had been outlawed by the Romans. So he says, I'm not a Rebbe that I teach people Torah. Rabban Shotarsi, Imani, I teach people weaving. I'm an expert weaver.
They killed him?
No, in the end, he was saved. They have a whole story over there. There were five charges against him, and all of them were dismissed. We learned the story in Avodah Zarah that various nisim happened. Anyway, the point is that we see that the word Rebbe doesn't always mean a Rebbe of Torah. It can also mean a teacher of other things.
It means master.
It means master, basically, right. So that's the question. Rabbi Chochom or Rabbi Tzayed. When we say over here, Oif Zetahar Masali Rebbe, does he mean my Rebbe in Torah taught me that this is a kosher bird? Or does he mean my master, my teacher in hunting taught me? Yeah, my science teacher taught me, yeah. Toshma, hello. Toshma, the Amr Rabbi Yechanan, who should baki behind him, b'shmei sayin. Well, we have Rabbi Yechanan qualified it by saying it only works if he's an expert on the birds themselves and on their names. So, Iyam, Shlomo Rabbi Tzayed, if you say you're talking about that his science teacher, that the one who taught him trapping is the one who taught him this chapter, well, then that explains it, because he taken knows the different birds, and he knows the names of them. Eli Amit Rabbi Chacham, but if you're talking about a Rebbe in Torah, Vishlema Shmaihu Gmir Lahu, the name, sure, because he can learn the Pesukim and he can learn the Gemaras that we learned before that identify the different birds. Eli Inhu Miyad Lahu, the birds themselves, the Talmud Chacham is not necessarily going to be familiar with because he doesn't go out into the forest and into the whatever to find all the different birds. Elalav Shmamino Rabbi Tzayed. So therefore, obviously, what it must mean is we're talking about that he's saying that my teacher in trapping, my science teacher taught me that these minim are tahar. Some gimel moment base near the bottom. Shmamino, good. So my science teacher. Shmamino, okay, that proves it. So therefore, you're allowed. So therefore, that's what it is. If you have a person says that tahar masali Rebbe meaning Rabbi Tzayed, then we're good.
So it's not his rabbi.
So now it's rabbi in Chacham, because such a one might know the names, but he might not know the actual birds themselves. But rather, we mean Rabbi Tzayed.
Now
you
have to become a Rabbi Tzayed.
Okay.
All the species, all the birds, all the plants.
Sure. Okay.
The Pokédex thing.
A what?
A Pokédex. You know what that is?
No.
You know Pokemon. So in the world, they have a little machine that you can identify the Pokemon that
you never see. Cute.
See it right there.
Yeah. Okay. But I kind of doubt that would work with birds, but I don't know. All right. Okay. Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be an app one day where you just call the birds.
Yeah, they have that, computer vision apps where you point your phone or camera over it and then...
Okay, the bottom line is anyway, in Halacha it says that nowadays there's no trappers that have this kind of expert knowledge, so you can only eat based on a Masorah that you have, as Rashi says, that you know that a community of Jews ate it in your community or whatever. Yeah. Okay, now that we talked about birds, let's digress a little bit to talk about eggs. Turn it up, Bonan. We learn in a Braisa. Loichin beitzim in a obikas chavim b'chol makom. You're allowed to buy eggs from goyim anywhere. The ein choshishin loy mishum nevelas loy mishum treifas. You don't have to worry that the eggs may have come from birds that are nevela or treifa, and that is how we're able to buy eggs in the store without having to check whether the farm they came from had nevelas or treifas. Because most birds are not. Most birds are not nevelous, and most birds are not treifas. The problem is the Dilma de Oif Tomi.
Ostrich?
One second. No. Hold on. First of all, we're talking... One second. You have to... Okay, so the question is the Dilma de Oif Tomi. Don't you have a different problem? Fine. You're saying you don't have to worry that they might have been from a bird that was a nevela or a treifas. What about they might be from a non-kosher species? So, okay, forget for a second about ostriches. Those are big eggs. But the point is, right? Yeah, of course. So the Gemara is going to talk about that soon, actually, how we know that eggs from non-kosher species are themselves not kosher. The answer is, Avur Dishmul answers, the case is that the Goy says these birds come from such and such a bird, which we know is an Oif Tahar. So given that, we can, now, you have a concept which is called Milsa David Le Gluya Lo Mishakri Inchi, that when you have something that can easily be checked, people don't lie about it. Mind you have lots of time with people nowadays. Milta David Gluy is something which is easily going to be uncovered. Loy Meshakri Inshi, people don't lie about that. Unfortunately, nowadays that's not always the case, which leads fake news, yeah, which leads to an expression, not necessarily, I mean, the expression in the Gemara that says that is Loy Meshakri Inshi. Not necessarily are people who would lie about such things, not necessarily are they in the category of Inshi, people. But anyway, whatever. the point is that ordinarily, most normal people won't lie about something easily checked. Like this, we can easily get birds from that particular species and see ourselves, do they match or not? So therefore we can accept that he's something.
The egg,
he said from which bird it is, and we know that it's a kosher bird, right? Right.
That it's a chicken.
He said it's a chicken egg, for example. Yeah. Now, with that, so the question is, why does he Dafka have to identify the species they're from? Why isn't it good enough if he says, why isn't it good enough if he just says, no, but he can say, for example, it's from a bird that I know that you Jews are allowed to eat? The answer is, because then he can easily evade it. Because he can say, if you find out that he's lying, it's not necessarily to mil to David or Leigui. He can say, okay, well, you know, I didn't say which particular bird it was. I thought that he would say, in other words, you know, it's not from a chicken, let's say, it's from some other bird, which as far as I know, you Jews consider it kosher. So like this, you wouldn't easily be able to check on him. As opposed to, if he says it's a chicken egg, or he says it's a dove egg, or he says whatever, you can easily check whether it is or not. Now, with all that said, before we go further in the sugya, you do have a different girsa that a number of Rishonim have, beginning from the Rif. The Rambam also holds this, which is that it's not loichin beitzim mina ojik achavim b'chol makim. It's rather that you're allowed to buy eggs, but without mina ojik achavim. According to them, in fact, you can't rely on the goy to say shal oif tahar poinihim. According to them, you can rely on that with a yid to say that they come from a particular kosher bird, but not from a goy.
Goy or
Ovid Kachavim? Yeah, Ovid Kachavim is just the census change for Goy. In the original manuscripts of Gemara, it said Mina Goy or Mina Nochri or whatever. The census changed it to Ovid Kachavim. No, so the question is basically, can you rely on a Goy for this, or can you only rely on a Yid? So it actually winds up being, it ends up being a machlokas among the Rishonim, in particular the Rambam holds that the stricter way, that you can't buy eggs from Goyim. The tour is more lenient. The tour follows the girsa that we have in the Gemara over here, that you could, as long as he identifies the species it's from. It ends up being a machlokas between the Mechaber and the Ramah. However, the Mechaber also adds,
they never have eggs from Goyim.
So how is it the Mechaber continues that nowadays we do buy eggs from Goyim without having a problem? The reason is, because we don't commonly have eggs from non-kosher species among us. You don't have really a lot of people who are selling eggs from ravens or from eagles or from other birds of prey or whatever. The normal eggs that you buy, you go to the store and you find somebody selling eggs. Well, in the olden days, you go to the marketplace. They're chicken eggs, maybe the occasional goose egg or whatever. You know, you're not going to find people. People aren't selling eggs from non-kosher species. Eagles eggs, let's say. Now, with that said.
So if
you're buying exotic type eggs, then yes, you have. Then you're subject to this machlokas whether you can rely on the goy to tell you what species it's from or not. But if you're buying ordinary common eggs in the store, then you can rely on that. You can rely that they come from the species that is normally from which eggs are normally sold, which by us is generally chickens. And as the Braita said before, you don't have to worry about nevelos or treifos because most birds are not nevelos or treifos.
So if you do live, let's say, in East Asia, where they do eat different types of food,
so then, well, I mean, the ordinary eggs that you buy in the supermarkets, they probably still are chicken eggs. But if they're not, if you're in a place where the ordinary eggs that they're selling are from other species, or for that matter, if somebody is opening a specialty store to sell exotic eggs or whatever, then yeah, then you'd be subject to this machlokas whether you can trust them. Okay. So the question. Well, you're not going to eat it, that's for sure. No, because it's however many thousands or whatever of years old, and it's not edible. Come on. Okay. The question is, why do we need to rely on the guy's word, on the vendor's word, to say whether it's an egg from a kosher species or not? Why shouldn't we be able to check the simonim of the egg? We're going to see. D'tanya, as we learn in a brisa, k'simoni based in kach simoni dogim, the same simonim that you have on eggs, so also are the simonim on fish. So one second. So Gemara interjects. What do you mean, simoni dogim? Talk about it. What do you mean, the same as the simonim of fish? Simonim of fish are snap of a kachkesis on marachmana. That fish have to have fins and scales. Eggs don't have fins and they don't have scales. So what do you mean? The same simonim? Yeah. No. What it means is ela ema. No, rather, what you need to say is as follows. The correct way to say it is as follows. Kach simoni ubre dogim. The same simonim as you have on eggs of chickens or of birds in general. The same simonim apply to the ubre of fish. Now, ubre means embryos, literally. So Rashi explains that what it means is like this. Regular fish eggs themselves are round. But when you have the collection of them together, the eggs are together, kind of like in a sac inside the fish, and that sac in kosher fish has a different shape than it does in non-kosher fish, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. Okay. There are Rishonim who have a girsa not ubre jogim, but rather kirve jogim. Kirve would mean, literally means the kishtis of fish. So in particular, one explanation is that it refers to that fish have an organ inside them which is called a swim bladder. It's basically an organ filled with air that allows the fish to keep its balance in the water. This way it's able to shift it around a little bit in its body, and that way it's able to keep its balance while it's swimming. So you have Rishonim who learn the girsa over here, kirve jogim, which therefore means that it's talking about that, the swim bladder, and in particular here he points out in Sichas Kolin that kosher fish have a different shape of swim bladder than non-kosher fish, a shape, as the Gemara is going to go on to describe over here. So here's a picture of it, for example. Well, it's basically pointed at one end and rounded at the other. But I'm telling you, that's what it is. It's an organ inside the fish, which is full of air.
And is it a lung?
No, it's not a lung. Its purpose is not for the fish to breathe. The purpose of it is for the fish to be able to keep its balance in the water and not tip over and not whatever.
Pretty much all
fish have something like that, yeah. Oh. Yeah. I don't know if all of them, but many of them do. Anyway,
How can they stay?
Because then it's balanced out by the weight of their body. But this way, in other words, this way, it helps them keep their buoyancy. That's what it is. Think of like a ballast on a submarine that, you know, to allow it to descend or ascend or whatever. Similar concept. Anyway, the point is that so you have the simonym of eggs of birds are the same as the simonym of ubre jogim or kirve jogim according to the different size. The Tanya Gabi Beitzim, and we learn a Braisa when it comes to eggs. Elu Hein Simoni Beitzim. The following are the simonim of eggs. How do you know whether an egg comes from a kosher bird or not? Kol Shekederes Va'agogolos. It has to be that the bird is, that not the bird, that the egg is Kederes Va'agogolos. Now, Rashi explains like this. Kederes means round like a ball. Agogolos also means round. The thing is, what it is Rashi says, the word agogolos by itself could imply round but flat. In other words, only two-dimensionally round, like a lentil, for example. So therefore, the word kederes clarifies that it means it has to be a three-dimensional, it has to be spherical, more or less. On the other hand, kederes itself would mean round like a ball, and it's not. As we're going to go on to say, kosher eggs are supposed to be pointed at one end and rounded at the other. So therefore, we also need the word agogolos to tell us that it means not perfectly round. So the two words together, kederes and agogolos, clarify the shape for us. It means oval, basically. Rosh echad kad, v'rosh echad chad, tohira. So if the egg is at one end of the kad is a broader round end, like a jug. V'rosh echad chad, and the other end is sharper, comes more to a point. Like think of a typical egg that you get out of your fridge is like that. It's more rounded at one end and more pointy at the other end. So then tahora, then that bird comes from a tahor species. Bez rasher chadin, but if you have both ends are rounded or both ends are pointed, tmein, then it's tome. Then you know it comes from a treka species. There's a verse they say on this, by the way, that this also hints at the quality the person needs in order to learn Torah successfully. The roisha echad kad, the rounded end, represents the fact that a person has to have this flesh, has to have the ability to sit and learn. The roisha echad chad represents the idea that a person has to have a sharp head. If a person has beis rasher chadin, he has this flesh, but he also has a dull head, or shnei rasher chadin, he has a sharp head, but he's also very jumpy and he won't sit. He's not going to get so far in learning Torah. Anyway, and continues, it's a verse, I don't remember from who. Also, also chelboin mibifnim v'chelm chelboin mibachutz v'chelmoin mibifnim. Also, if you have inside the egg, if you have the white is on the outside and the yolk is on the inside, like the typical eggs that we buy, Torah, then that egg is from a Torah species. Chelmoin mibachutz v'chelboin mibifnim. But if it's the other way around, the yolk on the outside, the white on the inside. Chelmoin is the yolk. Chelboin, the Loshon Cholov, is the white.
Chelmoin is from Loshon
what? I don't know.
Chel?
No. I don't know, but whatever it is. Chelmoin means the yolk, and chelboin means the white. So if you have the yolk on the outside and the white on the inside, tmeya, then you know it's from a tomei species. Sichas Cholin points out, you don't really find eggs that have the yolk on the outside, per se, but sometimes you have certain kinds of birds you have where the yolk and the white are kind of right next to each other. So that could be what the Gemara means over here by chelboin b'melchot. Okay. Also, chelmoin b'chelboin m'urovin zebazeh, and if you find an egg where the yolk and the white are mixed together, b'yaduashi beitzis asheres, then you know that it's an egg from a sheres. What the relevance of that is, the Gemara is going to explain soon. And also what we mean, by the way, by the yolk and white being mixed together. I mean, you don't really have, again, you don't really have birds, that you don't really have eggs where the yolk and white are mixed, per se, as if like it's all mixed up. But you do have, in a regular egg, you have, there's a membrane between the yolk and the white. That's how you're able to separate the yolk from the white when you need to, like in cooking sometimes. As opposed to, in a basis of sheret, you often have that the yolk and the white are not mixed together, per se, but there's no sharp separation between one and the other, and therefore it's very difficult to separate. And that's what Sichas Cholin explains. That's what the Gemara means by saying that they're murov in zebazeh. It doesn't mean like literally you're going to have a little yolk here and a little yolk there spread out throughout the thing, but it means the yolk is very difficult to separate from the white because there's no membrane between them.
Oh, there isn't.
There isn't, and therefore you know that's a basis of sheret. Okay, so anyway, the point is, this Braita is telling us that eggs have simonim. So therefore, again, going back to the case when a goy, according to our Girsa, or a yid, according to the Rish and the Rambam Girsa, brings us eggs, which we don't know what species they're from, and he tells us the name of the species they're from, then we can trust him. But if not, even if he tells us they're from an oif tahor, no good, why don't we check the simonim, see the shape of it, and see whether the yolk is on the inside and the white is on the outside, like it's supposed to be. The answer is loistricha dechatuchos. Yes, but the case where you have to be able to trust the vendor is where the eggs are chopped up.
You have them chopped up?
Well, you could. He's selling cut up eggs. One second. So the question is, okay, even if you can't check the shape, the libdos b'chelmon b'chelmon, you can still tell whether the yolk was on the outside or whether the white was on the outside. No. We're not talking about if they're chopped up like when you make egg salad. That's truchos. That's the next thing we're going to talk about. But the chatuchos means like they're cut into pieces. Well, let's say even again. They're cut into slices. Like a hard boiled egg, cut into slices. Yeah.
You can see the stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the question. The lubdik, the chelmon, the chelbon. Why don't you check the chelmon and chelbon, the yolk and the white?
Same when they cooked
and you can still see whether the yolk was on the inside or the outside, and vice versa. The answer is betrufus bekaira. Yes. So we're not talking about a case where they're just cut up. We're talking about a case where they're actually mixed together in a bowl. So it could either be raw eggs. We could either be talking about raw eggs where you mix them like you do in cooking, or it could be also like they were hard boiled, let's say, and then chopped up like for egg salad. So then you can't tell anything. So then you have to be able to know. Then he has to be able to tell you that they came from a certain species. So the question is, if that were the case, if we're talking about where they're all mixed up, where they're all beaten in a container, in a place, kahai gavna means like that. In that scenario, where they're beaten, kahai gavna means literally in that.
What's gavna?
Gavna literally means color, but it means in that kind of case. In that kind of case, when you have them that they're beaten and mixed up in a place. Are we allowed to buy eggs beaten eggs like that from goyim? We learn in a braisa, you're not allowed to sell eggs from a chicken or whatever bird that was trefa to a goy because he may resell them to a yid and they would be also. We said before, when you're buying regular eggs in the store, you don't have to worry about nevelos and trefas because most of them are not. But if you have a particular egg that you know came from a trefa bird, then you're not allowed to eat it. No yid is allowed to eat it. So you're also not allowed to sell that egg to a goy because he may resell it to a yid. Yeah. So what do you do? Elim ken tshufa b'kaira, only if it's beaten in a container. Lefichach, and because of that, precisely because of that reason, because not allowed to buy such eggs from, because the only way you can sell it to a goy is if you crack the egg open and beat it first before you sell it to him. Therefore, ein leishkin and beitzim tshufas b'kaira. Precisely for that reason, you're not allowed to buy eggs like that are beaten from a goy, because it may very well be that they were sold to him by a yid and they were beitzim tshufa, and you would have no way of knowing. So once the egg is beaten, once the egg is cracked open and mixed together, you can't buy it from a goy. So what are you telling me? That the case we had before, where a goy comes with an egg and tells you it's from such and such a bird, which you know to be a kosher bird, you're allowed to eat it. How would that work? Ela Omer Abdera Simonin Lavda Araisa. So Abdera says, you know what? Never mind what we answered so far. We said that. What brought us to this point, what brought us to say that we might be talking about eggs that have been cracked open and beaten, is that we were talking about why couldn't you, if the eggs were whole, you should be able to use the simonim to be able to check whether they're from a kosher bird or not. Now Rav Zera is telling us, no, you're misunderstanding. Simonim are not d'oraisa. Yes, we have these simonim. Practically speaking, you have these rules that we found that kosher birds' eggs are round, more rounded at one end and more pointy at the other, and tereza ones are not, and also the difference of how the yolk and the white are. But that's not valid on a d'oraisa level. It's not halachah l'moshe mitzinai, so it's not something that you can absolutely take to the bank. So therefore, we are talking about regular eggs, whole eggs, that a person is coming and selling, and you can't buy them from him, unless he says that they come from such and such a species, which you know to be kosher, because otherwise, even you check the shape of them and find that they match the shape of a kosher bird, and you crack them open and find that they match as far as the chelmon and the chelbon, not necessarily is that something you can take to the bank. There might be exceptions. Not there might be exceptions as kosher birds that are not like that, but there might be exceptions as there might be trefa birds that have eggs, non-kosher species of birds, that have eggs that resemble those of kosher birds.
You can trust the guy in this?
That's the thing. So we say, according to the gears that we have in front of us, if the guy says these eggs are from such and such a bird, you can trust him on that because the eggs are whole and you can check, and therefore you'll be able to compare afterwards. You can go compare, but not if they're beaten because simonim lav d'oraisa. Not if they're beaten, you anyway can't buy them from a goy. But even if they're whole, unless he says they came from such and such a creature, just checking the shape of them and the position of the yolk in them is not going to be good enough. And therefore, if he just says they come from an oif tahor without specifying which one, no good. That's according to the girsa we have in front of us. Again, according to the Rif and the Rambam's girsa, it's not even a goy, even a yid comes with them and says they come from such and such a bird, that they come from a kosher bird, no good. He would have to identify what species they came from. Again, the fact that we nowadays buy eggs without asking is because all the eggs that are sold, or pretty much all the eggs that are sold in the stores, are from known kosher species, such as chickens. But if you're buying eggs that are not necessarily chicken eggs, like exotic, so eggs from exotic species or whatever, then according to the gears that we have in front of us, which the Torah and the Ramah accept, then you could even trust the goy as long as he says what type of bird they come from and you know it's kosher. No, they come from, if the goy says they come from a kosher species. Okay, if you're buying eggs in the store, to given that they're chicken eggs, never mind that. But if you're, let's say, going and buying eggs that are not chicken eggs, so suppose you're buying them from a goy and he tells you, let's say, that they're pigeon eggs. According to the tour, according to the gears that we have in front of us, which the tour accepts as valid by halacha, and that Amal also does, you would be allowed to buy them from him because he says they're from a pigeon, and you can check them yourself. You can see that pigeon eggs, in fact, are shaped like that and then colored like that and whatever, and therefore you're good. According to the Rif and the Rambam and the Mechaber, you couldn't because maybe he's telling the truth that they're from pigeons, maybe not. Maybe he figures he can get away with it. Only if it's a yid bringing them and saying that they're pigeon eggs, then you're okay. Yeah. Okay, but anyway. So it depends whether you're an Ashkenazi or a Saudi, basically. I mean, the Mechaber Paskins like the Rambam, the Ramah Paskins like the Tur.
For Ashkenazi,
the Pashtos, it would be allowed to buy them from a goy on his say-so that they're pigeon eggs, let's say.
Are there general principles for how to deal with a goy's assertions and whether or not you can accept them?
Many times we say that we accept his assertions only if he's called Messiah Lepitumah. Many times we say not if he's actually saying it as as edus, as testimony, but just if he's saying it like, by the way, he's like telling an interesting story and you deduce something from it. In this case, but you also have the concept that we're saying over here about milsa David Glui, that if you have something which is going to be easily checkable, then he's not going to lie about it. So this is an easily checkable thing, but...
But there's no shash that he's a merchant, so, you know...
Actually, there is a concept which the Gemara talks about in Avodah Zarah called Uman Lemora Umanuse, that you have, just if he's a merchant, he doesn't want to lose his good name by selling something which turns out is the wrong item. So there's that factors in here also, I guess, yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point is, Rav Zera is saying the simonim are not deraisa. Yes, you can check the simonim, but they're not necessarily dispositive. Therefore, that's not good enough. You need him to tell you what species they're from. Actually.
They're not deraisa, then what are they?
They're derabanan. The chacham figured it out by checking it.
So meta-analysis.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Eloi Temahochi, and continues Rav Zera, if you weren't going to say that, if you were going to think that these simonim are actually valid on a deraisa level, in other words, that you can absolutely take them to the bank, then, what about, we learned before, that Rabasi said, that there are 8 types of birds on which there's a suffix, whether they're Tomei or Tar. If you were going to say that the simonim of the eggs are Jaraisa, Lidjik Rebasin, did who, then what's the problem? Check their eggs, see whether they match the shape and their positioning that we said. So obviously, therefore, the simonim are not valid on a daraisa level. They're a heuristic. They're something that the chachamim came up with by analyzing various types of eggs, but they're not necessarily. There could be exceptions.
Because of what?
Because we just said so. Therefore, these eight sfeikas, the 8 birds that we mentioned before, that and some bays and bays, that there's a stoppage whether we're allowed to eat them, even if we find that the eggs of them are shaped. Rounded at one end, pointy at the other, yolk on the inside, white on the outside, that's not good enough to be matched with them because the simonim are not daraisa, meaning in other words, therefore the simonim are not necessarily an absolutely dispositive thing, the simonim of the eggs. So therefore,
we thought
they might be. That's what brought us into the whole discussion about cut up. That's what we're talking about, the simonim of eggs. That's what we're talking about now. So that in that case, we have to ask if the simonim anyway are not a given. You can't necessarily take the simonim of eggs to the bank. So what's the point of them anyway? What's the nakimina? Why is the braisa bothering to give us the simonim anyway? So that's this hachikama. What the braisa means is like this. Beis rasher kadine, beis rasher chadin. If both ends are rounded or both ends are pointy, in other words, the egg is more or less symmetrical, or you find the yolk on the outside and the white on the inside, no question, badeitmeya, no question, it's absolutely from a tomei species, and you're not allowed to eat it, period. There's no exceptions to that. Reishe chad, but if you have one end pointy and the other end rounded, the chelman, rachos, the chelman, rufnim, and then you also find the white is on the outside, the yolk is on the inside, you still need something else. If then the merchant, the vendor, whatever, tells you they're from such and such a species of bird, and you know that species is tahor, then fine, you can rely on them because all those things taken together are enough to be mastered. The stomach, well, according to all you, say yes, according to the reason that I'm but if it's stam, if they just say it comes from a kosher species without specifying which one, or if they don't say at all what it's from, no good, you can't be stomach. Because you have eggs of ravens that look exactly like close to the birds of pigeons, and therefore it's not necessary. So therefore you might be selling raven eggs, and you think they're pigeon eggs because they look fairly the same, and you're going to end up eating raven eggs, which are trace. So therefore, that's why you would have to have him. So the point is, in other words, the part about whether they're rounded and pointed and where the yolk is and where the white is, that's a first line of defense. If you find it doesn't match the simonim of kosher eggs, even if the guy claims that it comes from a kosher species, that is, even if he identifies what species it's from, and you know it's a kosher species, still no good, because obviously somewhere along the way a mistake was made, because no kosher species have eggs that are pointed at both ends or rounded at both ends or that have the yolk on the outside. If you find that the shape of it and the position of it is good, you also need them to identify what species it's from to make sure, for example, that you're not getting raven eggs instead of pigeon eggs. Now, the Rashba points out, I mean, it's not, the raven eggs and pigeon eggs are not absolutely identical in otherwise the goy could.
Kosher.
Pigeons are kosher, ravens are not. But the point is, they're not absolutely identical. Otherwise, the goy could still try to get away with it. He could claim they're pigeon eggs when really they're ravens. So therefore, the Rashba says, not they're absolutely identical. Superficially, they're the same. But if you could check carefully, and you would find subtle differences between them.
If you know.
If you know, what are you looking for, obviously?
If you know what raven eggs are and what pigeon,
and what
eggs,
pigeon eggs are. Right, right. Okay, let's get back to the Braisa and analyze another detail of it.
Why don't we say if he's a mumche in this, then he can trust the goy because he wouldn't recognize it.
That's fine. And that, you know, again, we had our Girsa in front of us said you could buy from the goy as long as he says what particular species they came from. And as long as, again, the shape of it and everything matches. According to the Rif and the Rambam, not. Because again, they would, the pashtus, because they would say, because when can we trust the goy on such things? When he's Messiah or Pitomai, for example, when he's saying something casually, which by the way, you deduce from it an important detail, but not necessarily when he's actually coming and telling you, when he wants to tell you, you should know this comes from such and such a bird, he might be trying to make a sale and then get out of town or something. Whatever. The point is,
that's good, but if he's a mumche, why should he listen to a goy? He knows what eggs look like.
If you're a mumche yourself, okay, well then, you still need him to tell you what species they came from, because otherwise you yourself may, there might be other birds out there. You don't know every single bird in the whole world and all of their egg types, so you may still might be from a non-kosher one. So you have to have him tell you that it's from a kosher one, and that way you're able to check on him.
As long as the
guy doesn't know that it's a specific one which you know to be kosher.
As long as the guy doesn't know that lesson, then again, say,
well, yeah. All right. Okay, Omamar, so now we learned in the Braise. So the next part was, we said, chel boin v'chelman mu'rovin zebezeh, that if you have the white and the yolk of the egg mixed together, meaning, again, that there's no real membrane between them, b'yaduashi beitzes asheret, then the Braise said, you know that this egg is from a sheret. So the question is, why is it? What's the nakamina? What's the practical difference of that? So whether it's from a non-kosher bird or whether it's from a sheretz, either way you're not allowed to eat it. So what do we care to know whether it's from a sheretz or not? As long as you know it's not from a kosher bird, then you can't eat it anyway. The answer is, Amar of Ukva, Chama Loimar. No, but the point is, the chiddush of that part of the Braisa, the part that has an implication for halacha, she'im rikma, suppose that the embryo already starts getting formed inside the egg. Rikma means that it's forming. Roike means embroidering. So therefore, rikma and rikum and whatever, which we're going to talk about in the sugya, is talking about when the embryo starts the development of the embryo. So if the embryo started developing over there and reached the size of an adasha, which actually the Gemara mentions elsewhere, that the reason why an adasha, a lentil-sized piece of a dead sheretz, is metame, is because when a sheretz starts forming inside the egg, that's the size at which it's first noticed, that's the size it starts forming as a thing the size of a lentil. So if rikma, so then in other words, you have a lentil-sized thing of sheretz in there, the nikva, v'nikva, and then the shell of the egg was punctured, b'chadosha metame. Then you have an adosha, you have a lentil-sized piece of the sheretz in there, you're going to become tummy. As long as the shell is intact, you would not be tummy from touching the shell, because there's no way that you can be touching the embryo inside. But if there's even a small hole in the shell, where conceivably you could stick in even a hair, let's say, through that hole and touch the embryo, then already holding that egg is going to make a person tummy. Same thing, I guess. The point is, so therefore, that's why it's important to know whether it's an egg or a sheretz, because you have to know whether you're going to become tamei by touching it. Maskiflor Rabina, however, Rabina asks on that. Fine, but there are many different types of creatures that lay eggs, and not all of them are tamei when they're dead. The Dilma de Nachashi, maybe after all, who says, I mean, okay, the Mishnah is telling us, the Braisa rather is telling us that you have a simon for eggs of shrotim, but you have among shrotim, there are the kind that are metame when they're dead, and the kind that are not. You have only shmona shrotim, only eight types that are metame when they're dead. Not all of them are egg-laying creatures, by the way, but then you have a lot of other shrotim that also lay eggs that are not metame. For example, snakes.
That's the point.
That's Ravina's question. Why is the Braisa telling? The Braisa should have to tell us, how can you tell if this egg comes from one of the Shemona Shrotim? Instead, the Braisa is telling us generically that it's an egg of a sheretz. Fine, but there are Shrotim Tmeim and there are Shrotim Tahirim. Maybe it's an egg from a snake. You wouldn't know just by just like that. So just from the fact that the Chelman and Chelburn are mixed. Fine, but the point is, the Braise is not telling us that. So the Dilma de Nochashi, maybe this egg comes from a snake, and a dead snake is not Metame.
Right.
Ella, Omar Rava, so no, Rava says, a dead snake. Well, no living creature is Metame anyway. There's no living creature that's Metame.
An egg, an embryo.
Right, well, okay, right, well, that's right, right. The point is, if the embryo died inside the egg, yeah.
But if he didn't die,
if he didn't die, then he's still alive. Then he's not Metame, I don't think. In general, in general, living creatures are not Metame a person. The only living creature that can Metame a person is another person, another yid, specifically Midaraisa and Goyim for certain purposes. Derabanan, but yeah. Okay. Ella, Omar Rava, no, rather Rava says the reason why it's important to know whether an egg of a sheret is like this, she'im rikma v'ochla, again, the embryo starts forming inside the egg, and then a person were to eat that egg, loika alel mishu sheret ha-sheret ala aret, then he would get malchus for eating a sheret ha-sheret ala aret. In other words, the point is, Rashi says like this, if the braisa had not told us that when you have the yolk and the egg mixed together, when they have the yolk and the white mixed together at the base of the sheret, you would think that it's an egg of some other type of non-kosher bird. Then what would happen? Now a person is chay of malchus for eating those also, but it would be a different Easter, a different lab that he's being over on. He'd be over on sheret ha'oy. So if they gave him asra, don't eat that egg because if you do, you're going to be over on sheret ha'aretz, and he eats it, nothing will happen because they gave him the wrong asra. Therefore, it's important to know that it's an egg of a sheret. To tell you, therefore, if they gave him asra, don't eat that. It's an egg from a sheret ha'aretz, and if you are sheret ha'sheret ha'aretz, and you eat it, you will be chayiv malchus. Good, then that's a valid asra.
Even if it's a sheret ha'aretz.
No, that's the point. Because it has the yolk, because we check and we find that this type of egg has the yolk and the white mixed together, therefore we know that it's an egg of a sheret, and therefore we know that was a valid asra.
Okay.
How
did we check that?
You check. Let's say you have a bunch of eggs like that, and somebody ate one of them. Okay, yeah, you have to break things. Fine, so if you have one, then okay, I don't know. Tosfos, by the way, brings up an interesting point, which is, first of all, I mean, why is it anyway that we're talking about over here if the embryo starts forming inside the egg.
Right.
And let's say there was no embryo forming inside the egg. Wouldn't it be also to eat anyway? Because it's an egg from a snake or from a toad or what have you.
That's the question.
Why are we talking about dafka if the embryo starts forming inside it? Also, shows the fact, soon the Gemara is going to actually explain. The Gemara is going to actually bring a pasuk for us to how we know that eggs of non-kosher species are also anyway. So what do you need that for? You have a general concept in halacha called kol hayotze min atame tame. Anything that comes out of a non-kosher species is itself not kosher. So why do we need separate psukim for it? And why do we need to be talking about dafka if the embryo is forming in there? Because even if it's not formed, the chora should be dead. Exactly. So Tosfos discusses one possibility is like kol hayotze min atame tame. I don't know. We're going to talk about it later in the Masechta. Okay, we may have touched on it here and there. I don't know. Okay. The answer is Tosfos says like this. When you get down to it, forget for a second non-kosher eggs. How do you know b'chlal that eggs from kosher species are mutter? And the answer is because... Okay, but that doesn't necessarily mean that kol hayotze min ha-tahor. For example, the blood of a tahor species is also, even though it comes from a tahor species, the chelev of domestic animals is just because something comes from a kosher species doesn't automatically make it kosher. If it comes from a trefa species, sure, you automatically know it's trefa. But so how do we know that eggs b'chlal are mutter, let's say eggs of chickens or whatever?
Yeah.
The reason is because we have a mitzvah in the Torah of shiluach hakan that if you want to take the eggs from a nest, then you have to send away the mother bird first. Why would you be taking the eggs? To eat them. So therefore,
maybe to raise eggs.
No, because the Gemara explains. Tosfos brings that later on towards the end of Masechta, in the last perek, when we deal with the last perek of our Masechta, that shiluach hakan. The Gemara explains over there based on a drasha from the pasuk that we're talking about that you're going to be eating the eggs. So that establishes that eggs of tahor birds are mutter. Once we have that, so you would think maybe the same thing applies to eggs from non-kosher species as well. Just like you have, in fact, we're going to learn in Bechoros, we're going to learn in a couple of months from now when we get to the beginning of Bechoros, Be'ez Hashem, that there are certain exceptions. One famous one, of course, is bee honey, which comes from bees and nevertheless is kosher. We're going to talk about other rarer examples as well. So you would think, once you have that, maybe eggs of non-kosher species are mutter, and therefore we need a pasuk to tell us that not, which we're going to learn on other days. And therefore also, when we're talking about over here, in order for him to be chayev, for sheref, in order for him to be chayev, for sheref ha'aretz, you have to have an actual embryo in there. Otherwise, it's not. Otherwise, it's not. It is also, but not necessarily also to the extent that would get him malchus. That would get him malchus.
This is on the inside.
Right. Okay.
So it is.
Yeah. That's what we're saying. The point is, if it doesn't have an embryo inside, it's also, but he wouldn't get malchus for it, is what Tosfos is saying. If there's an embryo inside, then then he would, as long as they gave him the proper hasra. But that's why we need to know whether it's an egg from a sheret tzara. So the point is, then it doesn't matter whether it came from a sheret tomei or a sheret tzahar, whether it came from a toad or a snake, let's say, from a turtle or a snake. Either way, it's equally also as sheret hasheret alaris. So the question is, yihochi mai iri detmeya. Fine, but if you're going to explain it that way, then why does it matter? Why do we specifically have to know that it came from a sheret, which is tomei? Wouldn't the same rule apply afilu de tahora nami? Wouldn't a similar concept apply even if it was an egg from a tahor species? Because if you have an egg from a tahor species that has an embryo in it, then it would also be also. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braita, when the Pasuk says, Kol Asheret Asheret Alaret, the Pasuk says you're not allowed to eat any crawling thing that crawls or creeps on the ground, L'rabbis Efroichim Shalai Niftach Ve'enehem. That comes to include also that you're not allowed to eat chicks that whose eyes didn't open up yet. The chicks, the babies of certain kinds of birds, are born basically blind, and only a few days later do they open their eyes. So, one second. Rav Lezeb and Yaakov, never mind Tumah, we're talking about whether you're allowed to eat it or not. We're not talking about Tumah Vatara anymore. Here we're talking about eating it. Rav Lezeb and Yaakov, the Gemara doesn't mention, but in Beitza, where the Gemara also brings this, the Gemara explains that this is the opinion of Rav Lezeb and Yaakov. He says you're not allowed to eat, even after the chick has come out of the eggs. You're still not allowed to eat it until it opens its eyes, which is a few days after it's born. And therefore, the point is, now Rabbi Lezeb and Yaakov is saying that about after the chick was already born, after it already hatched out of the egg. But when the chick is still inside the egg, the pashtus, everybody agrees that it would be osur. And therefore, so a person would be pashtus, then a person would be chayav malchus for that as well. So why do we need to know that this particular egg comes from a sheretz, such that we need to give him asura for sheretz, asheretz, palaoretz, for him to get malchus? On the face of it, the same pasuk is teaching us also, according to Rabbi Lezeb and Yaakov, it goes even as far as after the chick is born, until it opens its eyes. According to the Chachamim, it's at least before that, before it actually comes out of the egg. It would also be called sheretz, asheretz, palaoretz. So a person is going to get malchus equally well, whether it's a chicken egg that has a chick developing inside it, or whether it's a snake egg that has a snake developing inside it. So what do we care? Because either way, it's sheretz hasheretz alaretz. So why do we need to be told how to identify a basis of sheretz? If the same thing would apply, whether it was a chicken egg or whether it was a chicken egg or a turtle egg or a snake egg or whatever. The answer is midrabbanan or kras machtabalma. The answer is this iser of the chick while it's inside the egg, or according to Rabbi Lezeb and Yaakov, after it's out of the egg, before its eyes opened up, is only midrabbanan or kras machtabalma. The pasuk that we just quoted, kol asheret asheret alaretz, is only an asmachta for that. So you wouldn't get malchus for that. So right, that's what we said. According to Rabbi Lezeb and Yaakov. No, that's, in other words, the point, this whole concept of that chicks are also to eat, even after they open their eyes, according to Rabbi Lezeb and Yaakov, or according to the Chachamim, at least while it's still inside the egg, is only also drabbanan. So therefore, there's no malchus for it. This that we brought upon, that kol asheret asheret alaretz, is only an asmachta. So the bottom line is, in other words, that if you were to eat an egg that has an unborn chicken inside it, it would be osur, and a person would get malchus maudus for it, but malchus daraisa he wouldn't get, because it's not really asheret alaretz, it's only drabbanan. Therefore, we need to know how to distinguish between an egg of a bird, such as a chicken, versus an egg of a sheretz, because an egg of a sheretz, given that the sheretz itself, well, we have to be able to distinguish, rather, between an egg of a, we have to distinguish like this, between an egg of a kosher species, such as a chicken, that has an unborn baby inside it, where we also only drabbanan, versus an egg of a non-kosher species, where if a person were to eat it with the chick inside it, he would be chayev for sheretz ha'oif, versus when it comes from a sheretz, where he would be chayev for sheretz ha'sheretz ala'aretz. So therefore, we need to know which is which in order to be able to know what hasara to get. So there still is. It still is true that the egg of a sheretz if a person were to eat that, he would be chayav malchus, but not because the baby is unformed yet, but because it's from a sheretz, and therefore it's included in sheretz or sheretz
halaris. How can he be chayav malchus if you kind of make a difference even by putting the egg between a sheretz and...
That's the point. The answer is you can, because in the egg of a sheretz, we said that the chelma and the chelba and the egg and the white and the yolk are mixed together. That's the Brai said that that's the case. So therefore, if you see that it's mixed up like that, you know it's the base of a sheretz. Therefore, if you see somebody eating such an egg that has an embryo inside it, he'll be chayav malchus as long as they gave masurah for sheretz aretz. That's the point. The halacha, by the way, is technically, as far as once the egg comes out of the shell, the halacha is actually not like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The halacha is actually like the chachamim, that it's also only the rabbanon, not like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says on a deraisa level. However, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings that it's nevertheless a miustik, it's a disgusting thing to do, and therefore you shouldn't really do it, just on the ground that you're not allowed to eat disgusting things anyway. To eat it after it was hatched out of the egg, but before it opened its eyes. Shechting and eating it. Okay. More about eggs. Turn it up on them. Geulei based in mutaris. Geulei of eggs, the Braisa says, on mutar. Now, what are geulei based in? So the word geul has a double meaning. Later on in the Masechta, when we get into the dinim of Basa B'Cholav and Taruvas and whatever, we're going to use the word Geule a lot to mean something that exudes out. Meaning like when you cook things together in a pot and you have taste from one thing exudes out of it into something else, or taste from the walls of the pot exudes into the food, that's Geule. So that's one explanation. Rashi explains that that's what we're talking about over here. Suppose that you cooked a non-kosher egg together with kosher eggs. The Braita is telling us it's mutter. The reason is because the non-kosher egg doesn't really give us flavor into the kosher ones. Rishonim say, many Rishonim accept that explanation, but say that would only be true if the non-kosher egg was not shelled. But if it had its shell removed, then it would give a flavor out, because then you have, there's no shell to block it, then you would actually need to have, it says in Shulchan Aruch, according to those opinions, you would need 61 times as much to be mevasel the terefa egg. 61 rather than 60.
Is there a taste to an egg?
Of course eggs have a taste. You never ate eggs before. No, the point is you have a certain flavor of it, certain molecules of it or whatever come out and go into the other one. So if the non-kosher egg was peeled, then you actually do. Everybody would agree. So then you need to be mevaselet, and the amount to be mevaselet, normally it's 1 in 60. In the case of eggs, it's 1 in 61 for a couple of reasons, one of that being because eggs come in different sizes. But anyway, the point is here we're talking about where the non-kosher egg was still in its shell.
If there's a suffix, are you making it or not?
As far as the suffix is what?
Like, let's say you bought a batch of eggs, and later you found out that it could be that the merchant was not so honest with you, and maybe some of the eggs are not what the eggs that you thought of.
So it's a suffix that I think you probably have to be honest. I don't know. Well, maybe not. I mean, the whole concept of bitul, a large amount of the concept of bitul is dirabanan, actually. In the daraisa, in general, you can mean the batul things, 1 and 2. So maybe it would be a suffix dirabanan. I don't know. So it's a good question. Not sure. Anyway, the point is, so according to Rashi, geulei beitzim means when you cooked a non-kosher egg with a bunch of kosher ones. Tosfos discusses the pros and cons of that and gives a different answer, gives a different explanation from the Aruch, that geulei beitzim means like this. You eggs develop inside a chicken or inside any other bird, and usually they take a certain amount of time to develop, and eventually the bird lays them. It can happen that you hit the bird on the egg producing area, on the womb or the oviduct or whatever, and it causes it essentially to miscarry the eggs. So eggs that are not completely formed end up coming out of the bird. Those are geulei beitzim, we're saying, because the word geul can also mean to come out like unnaturally, kind of. Tosfos brings from a pasuk shodi ibar v'lo yagil, the people in the time of the Dura Mabul or were very successful in life, their cattle would never miscarry. So the word geulei can also mean a miscarriage. So therefore, that's how Tosfos explains that we're talking about. In other words, the point is that if you have an egg like that that was prematurely laid by the bird, it's mutter to eat.
Because it's not
considered eiv menachai, even though it's not completely finished, it's not considered eiv menachai. With that said, though, in Shulchan Aruch it brings, based on other Gemaras, and that would only apply if it's performed well enough that it's not attached by gidim, that it's not attached by gidim anymore. If it still has gidim all surrounding it as it does in the early stages of development, then it would be considered Eid Menachat. Okay, anyway. Beitzim muzoros, continues the Braisa, eggs that are muzoros. Rashi explains muzoros means unfertilized eggs. So we talked about the other day that you have in connection with Trefus, we said that birds can lay eggs in one of two ways. Either they have, while the eggs are developing in them, they get fertilized by a male. Such eggs will eventually develop chicks in them, eventually develop embryos, which will develop in chicks. And they have unfertilized eggs where the mother, the hen, was stimulated to produce eggs by herself. The expression put in the Gemara in various places is safna da'ara, which heated up by the ground. But in English, in medical use, it's called parthenogenesis, where such eggs are not fertile. Such eggs will not develop embryos in them. So beitzim muzoros, so these eggs that are infertile, says the Braisa, nefesh yofa toichlein. Somebody who's not picky is allowed to eat them. In other words, so you have some people who are an istinist, who are very picky and very, very, very fussy about what they will and they will and they won't eat, and they would be repulsed, they'd be disgusted by such things. So they shouldn't eat them, because you're not allowed to eat things that are disgusting. But if you're not, if you're broad-minded and you can eat them, then fine. And Rashi says even if the hen sat on them for a couple of days, so they're already starting to spoil, you're still allowed. If you're a nefesh yafa, which is kind of a euphemism, by the way, it means like you're not so yafa, you're not so fine-minded, you're willing to eat anything, basically, then fine, you're allowed to eat them. They sat under the hen for a couple of days, no problem. They're not going to develop an embryo anyway because they're unfertilized. Nimsela koret dam. Suppose now you find a blood spot in the egg. You're allowed to throw out the blood and eat the rest of the egg. Rashi explains, specifically we're talking about over here, we're still talking about the beitzim hamuzores. We're still talking about these eggs that are unfertilized. They're the eggs that are unfertilized, these beitzim hamuzores. So if you find blood in them, it can't be from a developing embryo, because no embryo is going to develop in them. Therefore, it's just okay, blood, you're not allowed to eat it. So you take that blood spot and you throw it out and you can eat the rest. Which, if we went by that, it would mean that the eggs we buy nowadays in the store, we would be allowed to do that, because our eggs that we buy are unfertilized. However, first of all, we have, as we're going to go through over here in the Sugya, we're going to see a couple of different possibilities where the blood spot is. You also have different Rishonim, or different explanations of what the scenario is. The nimsel or actually, I shouldn't say as far as that. You have Rishonim who learn that nimsel or kurit dam is regardless. Even if it's a fertilized egg, in some cases you would be allowed to throw out the blood with the conditions that the Gemara is going to say now. So in principle, with unfertilized eggs, if you find a blood spot in it, you would be allowed to eat it. However, the minhag has developed that you
differentiate with a blood spot and without fertilization. How would you?
Because you know. If you buy them in the store, obviously you don't know. The eggs that we buy in the store are unfertilized. But if you run a farm, so you would know which eggs are fertilized and which ones aren't. You'd keep track.
Physically, how would you recognize?
I don't know. I mean, you'd start. Okay, so what you actually have is a fertilized egg. The Gemara is going to say in a second, you have something called kesher, which is an egg has a yolk and a white in it. And if the egg is fertilized, then you have a certain place on the egg where the sperm entered it in order to fertilize it. That place, the Gemara is going to call in a second the kesher chelmai. So therefore, and
you would see it.
Because you would open up the egg and you would see it. How else are you going to see the blood spots there? Okay, nowadays they candle eggs. They find a lot of blood. They find blood spots in general by candling the eggs before they're sold anyway. But the point is that if they weren't candled and you open up an egg and you find a blood spot in it, as the Gemara is going to say now, it depends really where the blood spot is, whether the whole egg is osir or whether only the blood spot is osir. Let's continue and we'll see. But the point is that if the egg is unfertilized, there's no kesher chelmon anyway. So how you'd know whether the egg is fertilized or not, you would open it up and see if there's a kesher chelmon, see if there's that
kesher
spot.
Kesher chelmon
is the spot where it got fertilized. And in English, they call it the germinal disc. And so it's the point in the egg where the embryo is going to start developing. Mm-hmm. So So anyway, in principle, based on what the Gemara is saying over here, the eggs that we buy nowadays in the store, if you find a blood spot in it, you should be able to throw away the blood spot and eat the rest of the egg. However, the minhag has developed not to make those distinctions, and we always just throw away the egg. With that said, it does say in the poskim that if you have it mixed up with other ones, then you can be makel rather than have to throw out the whole thing. So
that's one thing. It doesn't have necessarily blood. And a non-fertilized egg may have blood.
It may, but we're saying that if a non-fertilized egg has blood, it's definitely not from an embryo, because no embryo is going to develop in it. So it could be, for example, that the blood spot comes, let's say, from a blood vessel that ruptured while the egg was developing, whatever. It doesn't really matter. The point is, if it has fertilized, then the Gemara is going to distinguish. There's not necessarily going to be blood right away, but if it's fertilized, eventually an embryo is going to start developing in it. And then there'll be blood, but we're talking about before that. So one second. Amar Rav Yirmiyah, v'hushin nimtza al kesher shela. That would only apply if you found the blood on the kesher of it. Okay, the kesher is like this. Rashi explains, again, that the kesher is the germinal disc, the place where the sperm fertilized the egg, where it went into the yolk. That is where the chick starts developing. So Rashi learns that actually what this is lakula. Rav Yirmiyah is saying, if you find the blood spot in that particular place, it means it's only there. It didn't spread to the rest of the egg. Therefore, even in that case, so in other words, when we're saying over here, nimtza al kesher dam, it would mean, first of all, in a non-fertilized egg, but even in a fertilized egg, if you found the blood on the kesher chelmon, on that germinal disc, Rashi is learning, you would be allowed to throw out that part and eat the rest, because obviously then the blood was only in that spot. It didn't spread anywhere else yet, because that's where the development starts. But if you were to find the blood spot elsewhere, then you would have a problem, because then it means that it's developing throughout the whole egg. So one second. V'hushin nimtzal kesher shalasa, only if you find it on the kesher. Tony the story of Rav Aftariki, and the story the father of Rav Aftariki taught a brisa. Loishanu elashin nimtzal chel boin shalasa. That would only apply if you found it on the chel boin, on the white. But if you found it on the yolk, then the entire egg is also. Okay, so one second. So I got it. Okay. In an egg, you have as follows. Here's a diagram of an egg for you. So you have the yolk in the middle. You have the white all around it. Within the white, you have on both ends of it, you have little cord-like things that help hold the yolk in place. In English, they call them cow's eyes. The Gemara is calling them over here kesher.
Okay.
So according to Rashi, what we're saying is if you find the blood on the kesher, Rashi is not explaining that's the germinal disc, rather. Rashi is explaining that it means the cord that is tied to the wide end of the egg. If you find the blood spot over there, Rashi says, then it means you're allowed to throw out the blood and eat the rest of the egg, because it means it's only over there. But if you find it on the cord, and that in that part of the white on the cord, then it would be mutter to throw out the blood spot and eat the rest. But if you were to find it anywhere else on the yolk in particular, then it would be also, because it means that already there's development of the embryo going out.
Penetrated the yolk.
Penetrated or not, doesn't matter. Rashi just says, if you find it, al-chel min shalav, then the whole thing would be also. My timer, then why would it be also in that case? Deshada tichla bekula, because then you have that the reyes of tichla, which means like the problem in it is already spreading throughout the entire egg. So the fact that you found it already on the yolk implies that there's much more development of the embryo going on over there. Amalei Rav Gavia Mibeik Sil, Rav Ashi, sort of Gavia Mibeik Sil points out to Rav Ashi, you should know, as far as this that we just said, that we're saying that if you find the, that Rav Yirmiyah had said, if you find it on the kesher, and Rav Distori, the father of Rav Aftariki, had distinguished between whether you find it on the cord in the white or whether you find it on the yolk, where then it would be also. Actually, if Tana had taught the Braisa the other way around in front of Abaya, that if it's on the yoke, it's Mutter, and if it's on the white, it's Mutter. But Abaya would have touted it. And you should know Abaya flipped it around and explained it the way we just said it, that it's also if it's on the white and Mutter if it's on the yoke.
Why did that?
because that's not by a hell, but that's the correct version. Now, with that said, you actually have, there's a great deal of discussion about this among the Rishonim. In particular, the Ra'ah, actually, the Ra'ah, one of the great Rishonim, or the Bavplugta of the Rashba, discusses this, and he says, you know what? Actually, the first version of the Braisa, before Abaya corrected it, is the correct one. That it would be also if it's on the yoke, that it would be also if it's on the white and mutter if it's on the yoke. No, because he learns. No, because he learns the other way around. That it means is that the Ra'ah learns. In other words, that the way we just quoted the Braisa is the way it was before Abaya flipped it around, and the Ra'ah says the way that we quoted it is actually correct because the Ra'ah says the Ra'ah learns the chick, the embryo actually develops from the white. And he says, because you see, you open up an egg and you find the chick inside it and you find all the white is gone, meaning that it develops from the white. So therefore, it's more logical that a blood spot on the white is more of a problem than a blood spot on the yellow. Now, on the face of it, it's not like that. You know, on the face of it, it actually develops from the yellow. So that's the thing. So you have a great deal of discussion among the Rishonim how to understand our Gemara about different possibilities of how to understand it. You also have the question, like this, we learned, which is how Rashi learned, that Rav Yirmiyah and Rav Distoy are both agreeing with each other. Rav Yirmiyah mentioned, if you find it on the Kesher, and Rav Distoy is saying that there's a difference between if you find it on the white, it's also, and if you find it on the yolk, it's mutter. Many Rishonim learn that Rav Distoy is disagreeing with Rav Yirmiyah. That Rav Yirmiyah is saying if you find it on the Kesher, and also, what does Rav Yirmiyah mean? Does he mean that if you find it on the Kesher, then you can throw out the blood and eat the rest, or does he mean if you find it on the Kesher, the whole thing is awesome?
So
you end up with a number of different explanations among the Rishonim of Or Gemara, and the result of that is that in general, in a fertilized egg, if you find a blood spot almost anywhere in it, you're going to have to be machmir according to one or the other occasion. Because we don't know which version is correct. Again, if it's an unfertilized egg, in principle, none of that applies. You would be allowed to throw out the blood and eat the rest. However, the minhag has developed not to. But you know, there is also, though, it does point out in Shulchan Aruch, I mean, look, you're allowed to, for example, hard boil an egg and eat it, even though if you hard boil it of necessity, you can't find a blood spot on it ahead of time. But you're allowed to because most eggs don't have blood spots, and because even if you do find one, in principle, only that part is also, and the rest is mutter anyway, because the eggs are unfertilized.
How would you still recognize an egg that has been fertilized?
Again, nowadays, when you buy them in the store, they're all unfertilized. How would you recognize whether they're fertilized?
An egg that's fertilized, how are you going to recognize it?
So you would have...
Initially,
I don't know. I don't think there's necessarily any difference between the outside of it. But, okay, but nevertheless, though, the fact is that in one case, if you find a blood spot on it, it's also, and in the other case, if you don't, then it doesn't matter. Then what? You're still allowed to eat fertilized eggs. As long as the embryo wasn't sort of developing in them, yeah. Because if the embryo started developing,
there is no embryo.
Then fine, then you're allowed to eat them. Why should not?
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay, that's you're allowed to. There's no reason you shouldn't be. Okay. I guess let's leave the continuation for tomorrow. Okay.
We're way behind, right?
We are way behind, yeah.
Yeah, I already started.
You already started the next paragraph, yeah. Yeah, today's
that. Hello, the regular doctor, you mean?
Yeah. Where are they up to regular?
Well, today officially is supposed to be Daf Samach Teh, so we only learned most of Samach Daled today, so yeah.
So how are we going to make it up?
I hope over time we'll have a chance to make it up. I don't know.
I'm excited.